The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deek speaking.
Welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and joining me first time guest Charlie Clausen, which is very exciting to have her on the podcast. I've been a big fan for a long time, and we've got the opportunity to work together for the last week or so in Bermuda, of all places. So it's very nice to have her on the podcast. Welcome, Jessica Curson.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, is it Curson, like rhymes with person? Is that how
it
you
is.
Go?
Yeah. It's Curson, but a lot of people say Curson.
Yeah, in America, that's that was kind of my... We would say Curson in
you
Australia.
Would?
But yeah, but I was like, oh, well, maybe it's like an American Kirsten sort of.
Everyone says Kirsten.
Yeah.
And I don't even correct them anymore because I'm so used to it. So I just answer to Kirsten now. But it is Kirsten.
Yeah, I like that more.
Yeah, me too.
It also sounds like, you know, like that's how we'd talk about swearing in Australia as well.
Right,
like,
Kirsten. I'm cursing at you.
Yeah, Kirsten's cursing.
Yeah.
I like it. She's a cursing person.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are delightfully funny. Can I just say that for a start up
thank
the front?
Thank you. That's huge coming from you.
I mean, so funny.
Thank you.
Like nonstop, like just a wall of like great comedy. I've been watching, we've been doing these shows and they've kind of, well, the first night you didn't have to be involved. The first night here, Alonzo Bowden and I did like a show ourselves and we had been warned. It was in the City Hall and we got the big speech about like, you know, please... Don't do any rude stuff, please. You know, keep it clean.
Yeah.
They kept saying to me, cruise ship clean. And I was like, I've never been on a cruise. I don't know. I know that you're saying this like this is meant to give me an explanation of how I'm meant to be performing, but I do not understand what that means.
Right.
And then we all worked together on Thursday night in a sort of, I think it was a more corporate style. You know.
Yeah, they were sitting at round tables. And
yeah,
they
cabaret
were,
setting. Yeah. The enemy of comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I'd really like? Is I'd like the audience to be really spread out.
Spread out, and some of them have their backs to us. Yeah. That makes me feel good.
Yeah, or at least sides.
Yeah, yeah, and they don't turn around.
And
if you
could continually serve them food at the same time, that'd help.
Yeah.
But it was a fun show. But then last night, we kind of got to actually just do a proper old school stand-up show. And, oh my God, like, I mean... I love to laugh, but I'm not sure that I have laughed that hard in 6 months.
Really?
Like, I just
only
thought
6 months?
Well, yeah, I know. Look at you now. That's the comedian going.
No,
I really
know it's always negative. It's always I left stage last night and thought I didn't do that well. I'm really
kidding?
Hard
well,
on myself. Yeah.
Beforehand you were not in the mood, right?
No, I'm not because I'm depressed because of what's going on in my country.
Uh-huh. But you're not in that country. You're in Bermuda.
I know, but I can't.
Get all your money
CNN
over here.
Constantly.
Don't pay any tax.
I can't look at the positive of anything right now. No, really. They were a great crowd. Now, we can talk about me for a minute, but you ripped the room apart. You killed last night. Like, seriously, people were screaming laughing at you.
Well, that's good. I like that.
You did. I was like, wow, this is incredible. Because I don't normally see comics really kill like that.
Well, that's nice because we did have the table of people come up to us the night before. It's always good to have an Australian in the room. The night before, literally somebody came up to me and goes, I think they're only laughing the first half because they couldn't understand what you were saying.
Which makes absolutely no sense. Like, it made no sense what she said.
That's the best, though, because I was like, well, that's easier than writing jokes.
Of course.
If I could literally tour places and just get like 15 minutes of laughs just like saying
mumbling.
Gibberish.
Just go, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that made no sense what she said.
The Swedish chef from The Muppets would be the biggest comedian in the world. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So tell me about what's going on in your country. Let's move off the gigs and stuff here. No, I mean, because it is interesting to hear, I think, from an insider's perspective. And of course, you're a New Yorker as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting to get a New York perspective on Trump, because Trump lives there mm-hmm. and is of there, but in the election was overwhelmingly rejected by the city. I mean, you know, really barely got a vote in New York. I think the New York perspective on Trump is probably, you know, as interesting as any. What do you think? What's going on? Where's your head at?
Oh, boy. Well, he, you know, he's this reality star that I never liked even before all of this happened. I couldn't stand his energy. And, you know, he was kind of, you know, it was a joke. I mean, he would be a Celebrity Apprentice, you're fired, and all that other stuff. And he just, I guess, he has a very big team behind him, tons of money. And he's, you know, they're marketing geniuses. And they just appeal to all these people who, you know, a lot of these people hate women, they're racist, and they believed a lot of stuff that he said, that he would give them a better life and make America, quote unquote, make America great again. And the funniest part, I mean, it's not funny, but those people are going to be affected the most.
Oh, right.
I mean, the poor or middle class white people in the middle of America in the South are going to be affected the most out of everybody.
I mean, that promise that he said, and I get it. Like, if you've lost your job, if the factory moved out of town or whatever because mm-hmm. it went to China, you know, because they can make it cheaper there, because that's globalization, right? Mm-hmm. I understand that you're mad. And if he says, I'm going to bring the jobs back, you might go, oh, well, that'd be great because I need the jobs back. But here's what he's not going to be able to do.
No.
Bring the jobs back.
Exactly.
Unless you're happy to pay $15,000 for an iPhone.
And look at where everything he has made. I mean, everything he has, every business, like he's had everything made out of the country. He is just, in my view, a horrific person and a very sick person. I mean that. Like, it's not even, I'm not even trying to be funny. I really don't think he's okay. I think he's mentally ill. And I think that he has some kind of disorder, is not medicated. I really mean that, because there's tweets at like 3 a.m. They're insane. The spelling's off. You know, the stuff he's saying is so crazy. I have to say, I wish I could love him. I swear I would do anything to love him. But he just, every time he opens his mouth, it is just so ridiculous and so upsetting. And it's pathetic. It really is pathetic.
Well, you kind of hope that maybe the election thing was a bit of a con. Yeah. Like, that was the hope against hope. That, like, he decided that that was his tactic to win, that you go out and you say all these things and you appeal to...
That's how I felt. Yeah, right? You're right.
But then once he actually wins, he'll stop getting on Twitter and saying stupid things.
That's how I felt, yep.
Right, because you're president-elect. I mean, in 10 days, in 7 days, he's going to be president.
Yeah.
And he's still tweeting about Saturday Night Live.
He's tweeting about he is the weakest person I've ever encountered. I mean, it's thin skin. He cannot handle rejection. He cannot handle anyone saying anything about him. And it's pathetic. I mean, really, it's like he responds to every person. I'm actually getting a kick out of it now. Like, I'm praying Betty White or someone really innocent says something and he's like, you fucking bitch. How dare, you know, I just want him to attack like a child or Betty White or someone who's dying. Like, just someone who, you know.
Well, it's that thing now where, like, I mean, and the way he goes at it too. Like, it's like, I mean, the Meryl Streep thing was the funny one for me, because what he's going, if you're going to, you can make fun of her for a whole bunch of reasons. You could say that she was, you know, she didn't understand the plight of middle America. You could say she was rich. She was in an ivory tower that maybe all those things, but that she's overrated as an actress.
I laughed out loud. I laughed out loud. And all these comics in the U.S., all these New York comics wrote before he responded, he's going to say she's overrated.
Right.
He's like predictable now.
Yeah.
He's completely predictable. I know what he's going to say even before he says it. I mean, he's just pathetic.
I mean, the only thing I've really agreed with him saying is that Saturday Night Live isn't as funny as it used to be. But I feel like that's not his job. I feel like he should not be sitting at home watching that. Shouldn't he be like reading books on, like, you know, How to Lead a Country for Dummies and stuff.
Yeah, first of all, he says boycott Hamilton. That's right. Sold out to like 3,000. Like,
yeah.
It's so, I mean, everything he says not to do, everyone goes and does it. Meaning, right. Like, Hamilton's tickets soared after he said that.
Yeah, like, he gave Hamilton its much needed boost.
Right, exactly. And he loves it. He loves this conflict, this angst, this fighting. He really does.
Do you think he does? I mean, it's hard to tell what his motivations are.
If he didn't, he wouldn't do it. I mean, literally, if he just kept quiet and stopped responding, I think a lot of people would be okay with him. It's all of this Twitter and stuff that he's saying, you know, when he's interviewed, and, you know, the way he yells at people and yelled at the CNN reporter. I mean, it's scary shit. Seriously. I mean, we're joking, but it really is scary. I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know.
Well, that is the thing now. Like, because now that you're seeing it, there was a really good article, actually, just a couple of days ago. A Russian journalist wrote like an article about what it's like to be a journalist under Putin, and kind of warnings and, you know, kind of symbols of already what's happening, you know, under, you know, Trump, and how the media are going to be treated and how the media will then adapt so that, like, people will be. And you see it already.
You do.
You know, the normalization or the trying to suck up, because he's the president and they want access to the president. So suddenly you start to normalize this behavior, yeah, so that you're not the person who gets kicked out of the room, I guess. But
right.
But yeah, I do agree that it's now, I mean, well, I haven't found it funny for a very long time, but now it's really darkly, scarily, it's about to happen. Mm-hmm. As a comedian, because this is the thing that I get asked a bit, you know, you get that kind of cliche of people going, oh, well, it'll be good for comedy, right? It'll be good for comedy, right? But how do you feel about that?
No, it's not good. No. It's actually, I mean, well, I have different views about it. First of all, I don't talk about Trump on stage, but I talk about the country and how, you know, decisions that people made and how stupid I think people have been. And it gets a good response in New York, but now, you know, I have to be, and all these comics that I know have to be so careful about everything we say, because, you know, people that follow him and like him are like psychotic. I mean, right. They really, they'll heckle, you know, there's comics who are so clean and so kind on stage and just do, you know, jokes, and then they've brought stuff up about politics and they've been heckled horribly. I mean, I've been talking to them recently, and it's very divided. A lot of times I get on stage in the United States and half the audience I feel is with me and half is really like protective of him. And it's unbelievable. It's been very, very hard for me. I say on stage, just knowing how evil some of you are, do you have any idea how hard it is for me? Like, my job is to make you laugh. Like, that's my job, right. Is to make you happy. And I hate you.
Right.
I hate you. And I have to make you happy. It's hard.
People don't think about that. I often think about that if there's some, like, somebody saying something terrible or they completely disagree with something nice I might have put on the internet about, like, asylum seekers or something, and they're like, you know, whoa, I thought you were meant to be a comedian, unfollow. And I'm like, oh, you don't understand. Like, I don't want to entertain you.
Right.
Like, I feel bad that I've, like, worked this hard and come up with all these jokes, and then some asshole who I didn't like was enjoying them.
Right. I'm upset you were even following me in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how was I not clear enough up until this point that I did not want you involved in this business?
Yeah, they just heard what they wanted to hear. But I feel like it's my responsibility as a comic and as an artist to be honest and say how I feel. And I'm past the point of just trying to get laughs now.
Uh-huh.
And I know you feel like that. I can tell just from you meeting you and knowing you and listening to your comedy. I feel like I have to be honest and speak the truth and my truth, or else I have to stop doing comedy. I have to talk about real issues and try to make them funny. But I'm not interested in just getting up and making people laugh anymore. That's not...
When did that change for you?
It changed in the past year. Like, it really shifted from all of this going on, because I feel like I have to talk about what's really going on. If I just go up and pretend like everything's fine and just make people laugh, that's not real. Like, I'm really down and concerned and scared and angry, and, you know, there's really not much excitement, which is upsetting. There's not... And I feel, I know I mean, tons of people that feel the way I do. You know, this is how most of my friends and family feels. It's scary stuff.
What do you think is the thing you're most scared about?
War.
Right.
I never, now this would never have been my answer a year ago. That's what I mean. It would have been about, you know, social issues and gun stuff. I mean, now it's literally like I'm praying we don't get into a war. I mean, I really, that's my big concern now.
Well, America's not that fond of going to war, so I can't imagine.
Well,
I'm
just afraid of some huge thing happening because look what we're talking about. He is responding this much to Hamilton, SNL, Meryl Streep,
right.
You know, a congressman. It's like, what is going to happen if some leader of a country like North Korea or whatever starts bad-mouthing him or saying one thing, like he has bad hair?
Right.
I mean, it's who knows what he'll do. He's completely out of control. He's ill. He's an ill person.
That is, the war thing is, of course, very interesting because if we... Does it sound like there's a hurricane?
There's a lot of wind next door.
Yeah, it really is. I was like, what is going on?
It's in the other, because Will has a suite. I don't. I'm staying in a broom closet, but Will has a suite. And
the headliner gets a suite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm a white man, and it's Trump's America.
That's right. And you're good looking. Well, he closed the door to the bedroom because I don't know what you're hiding in there, but he closed the door. And in that room, there's a lot of wind. I don't know what's going on in there.
Well, you know what it was, actually? I opened up because there's a little, the balcony. You can look
at veranda.
The veranda. Yeah, we got a little veranda. And I opened it up and a little bird flew into the hotel.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And then it was flying around in there. So I kept the door open the little bird could fly out again.
So there's a bird in there?
Well, there may not be anymore because the door's open.
Well, with that wind, the bird's dead. That is like some strong
wind. There's not a dead
wind.
Bird in there.
There might be.
They're birds. Birds are used to wind. If birds died every time there was wind, birds would constantly be... I would think that birds are in favor of wind. Doesn't that do half of their job for them? As long as the wind's going in the right direction.
Yeah, but it sounds really intense. Right. I mean, is it a tiny bird? Or is it...
it's tiny. Like those little tiny birds.
Oh, so it might
birds.
Not be alive.
Oh, okay. Now you've convinced
can
me that
we
the
go
dead
in there
bird...
And see?
Okay, we can go in there. Let's just pause this. We can't take the microphones in, but we can go and have a look at the bird and then we'll come back. So bird seems to have left.
Yeah, I didn't see the
we
bird.
We didn't see a bird. And you didn't see anything incriminating in there, like I was hiding anything, right?
No blow-up dolls or no.
No, I mean, that'd be tough to travel internationally
would you ever,
with.
Yeah, would you ever do that?
Have sex with a blow-up doll?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the circumstance? Just for fun or probably not just for fun? Like not just in a like...
To enter, like, just, yeah.
For the entertainment. I can't
like
really
horny,
see, like...
Just bring a blow-up doll with you.
No, I can't really see that. Like, in my pool at home, I have, like, you know, like a big blow-up swan and a flamingo that you can kind of, like, float around on.
No, I know, but it doesn't have, like, a hole in it.
Yeah, but you could make one. You don't need to be MacGyver, you know, to kind of put a hole in there. Can you imagine? Even just putting the hole in and then inviting people around and never mentioning the hole?
No, never. And it never. And it looks very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get like, do you know what a fleshlight is? Are you familiar with what a fleshlight is?
Yeah.
Maybe I could like get some sort of thing where you kind of essentially insert the fleshlight so that it has a...
And then put arrows like, right...
I love the idea of arrows.
Yeah, arrows, and like, you never address
never,
it.
Never address it.
Orange arrows.
I mean, because that to me is like, does he need the arrows? Does he not? Why are the arrows there? Like, is it a guidance system? Like, is he, like, is it like Sully? Is he landing the plane? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, there's...
I don't understand.
That's so funny.
No, I don't think that... I mean, I guess maybe for... No, what purpose? What possible scenario could I be in where I would do it? Maybe to like to save someone's life or something. I don't know why. Right.
But if you
know,
were dared and like just for
not just for a dare, not for kicks. I'm not the sort of person who would like. I once went to, when I was 17 years old, my best friend at the time, Peter Shepherd, and myself, he had an older brother. And his older brother, one of his friends, was getting married. And so we got invited. They must have been just, they're only probably 3 years older than us. So, you know, I think we're probably last year of high school and they're like, you know, 20, 21, something mm-hmm. like that. But one of them's getting married. And he has a bucks party, a stag do, right? You know, and we get invited, like, you know, as the kind of younger, you know, brothers, but we get invited right. along to this thing. And it's very exciting for us. You know, we've never really been to anything like this before. Yeah. And it has honestly scarred me for my entire life because, well, firstly, like they had a stripper and we were both excited, like, you know, at age 17.
Oh, of course.
And this is before the internet.
Yeah.
Of course. So, like, you know, literally, this is probably the first time we're going to see a fully nude woman, right?
Right.
So we go to this this party and then we go out to this guy's garage, like, you know. So okay. already mm-hmm. pretty terrible. And they've arranged chairs, like, so the garage is empty, but they've arranged like chairs all around the sides of like the garage, right? So there's like 20 guys now just like sitting in like a circle around
this,
like,
is already hysterical.
Right, cement floor. Yeah. Like, so concrete floor, like, yeah. I assume they've hired these chairs. It's not like a random collection from around the house. It's right. like they've gone to some company and they've got like 20 fold-out chairs,
folding
right?
chairs, yeah. right, yeah, yeah.
And then they're arranged around. So we all sit around.
Yeah.
And then there's like a chair in the middle. And so the guy who's going to get married, he goes and sits on the chair. Uh-huh. And then the stripper comes in and she essentially gives him a lap dance, I guess you'd call it.
Was she hot?
Oh, you know what? I cannot remember.
You blocked it out.
I have really
what
blocked it out.
There?
Well, here's what happened. So, like, here is what happened.
Something happened something, to emotionally scar you.
Something really happened
oh,
to
no.
emotionally. Yes. So.
You were molested.
So.
Kind of. All right, go on. I we're know. All sitting, I was too. We'll talk about
it. We're all sitting around in a circle. Mm-hmm. And she's doing a little dance. And it's weird to watch because it's really just for him.
Right.
Like, there's no reason for us to be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it is weird to watch that. I agree with you.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, this would be better if he just came in here and did that with her.
Right.
And we were all just out there going, hope he's having a good time.
Yeah.
Like, why are we witnessing
this? In a circle
this?
Watching.
Yeah. It
yeah,
feels
it was
like.
Very weird.
Yeah. It feels like Tom Cruise is going to arrive and, yeah. you know, something yeah. weird's going to happen.
Feels like The Accused.
So, oh, yes. yeah. I mean, I had not seen the movie at the time, but in retrospect, yes, it did feel like I was about to be involved in a major crime.
Right.
Something that would haunt me for the rest
yes.
of my life. Yes. Yeah, as an adult, I would have seen those danger signs and removed myself from that situation.
Of
but
course.
As the youngest person at the party, I was, you know, you go along with, you're like, well, I guess this is normal, right?
Right.
It's only since that I've, like, really, like, looked back on it and picked it apart and realized how fucked up it actually was. But we haven't even got to the bit that disturbed me the most. So there's a, so she, now he's not on the chair anymore. He's lying on the ground, right?
Wow, okay.
As she's like, you know, trying to, you know, cavort all over him, basically, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple of things that are bothering me about this already. One, he's just lying on the cement. And I feel like, to me, could we have not have like put down like a blanket or a towel or something for this? This doesn't, like, even the joy he must be getting from this must be like counterbalanced by the discomfort
it
he's feeling.
It sounds horrific.
Right?
Yeah, cement. It's
cement.
Horrible.
Cold
yeah.
cement. He's
well,
laying
he,
on.
He wasn't moving any hands or anything. Like, he was just laying there.
He's laying there because she's like kind of doing everything over the top of him, right?
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize at that stage was that you kind of, your bucks party stripper operates by a different code to say your strip club stripper. You know, you go to a strip club, maybe there's some rules about like touching or how
oh,
far
no.
it's going to go
yeah.
or like those sort of things.
Yeah.
But you kind of, your garage stripper.
On cement.
Yeah, it's a whole new ball game. You know what I mean? Like,
the lawnmower's missing.
Yeah, rules do not apply.
Yeah.
This is not cruise ship clean.
No.
So.
This is not cabaret seating.
Not cabaret seating at all. No. So no one's got the. So anyway, she then unbuttons his pants.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because up until now, essentially what we've seen is a naked lady.
Oh my God. And you're sitting in a circle.
Sitting in a
this.
Circle. Okay. Watch all of us. Mm-hmm. And so now we're seeing his penis.
Right. Which is, yeah.
I mean, just not really what I was expecting.
Yeah.
And I'm not, again, not really sure whether this is meant to be fun or is this some sort of ritual humiliation? Is this like...
That's what I'm thinking. And you're 16.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah,
okay.
16. Yeah, 16, maybe 17. But like certainly young.
Right. Before internet. Yeah. Maybe before all this stuff.
Exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Like an old school 16.
Yeah, me. I know.
Not 16 now, where people know more about sex than I know about sex. But like...
Very different
old
when
school
we were young. Yeah.
16. So... She's trying to now masturbate him in front of all of us.
Oh,
right?
My God.
But again, he's lying on the floor and she's just sort of like, you know, just up and down with the hand. Like, I don't know, like she's trying to plunge a toilet or something. You know what I mean?
I have a question. What was everyone doing at the time?
I mean, there was there was music playing.
Okay, because I'm like, if there was silence and everyone was like...
Can you imagine?
Like, no, I mean,
like if
really,
there was no
was,
silence.
Yeah, that's
there was
what
no
I,
sil- yeah.
That's what I
no,
thought.
No, there was music. She had like a, she brought a, probably a cassette tape player back then.
An 8-track.
Yeah, she set up a turntable. She brought in some 45s. It was, she had a gramophone. She had to wind it occasionally. One arm was winding the gramophone and the other arm was like... I didn't mention that she had cymbals between her knees. That was
she had a horn in her vagina. Thank God you said there was music because I'm picturing silence with 20 men sitting around. That's weird.
There was music. Okay. I can't remember what the music was, but there was music. There was definitely music. So you know, and I think at the start, again, I'm kind of piecing this together. This is not would not stand up in court. The bit that I remember has kind of blocked out a lot of the the other stuff.
I get it. It's like my whole childhood.
Right.
Yeah. It's true.
I'm sure there was lots of fun bits about it, but the disturbing bit is really...
That trumps everything.
So, and trumps is the appropriate word.
Yeah.
So I think there was probably some hooting and a hollering at the start. You know, people were like, this is great. You know, there's a stripper and this is fun. And then she's like trying to get him going. And either because, you know, he's marrying the love of his life in 3 days or that there's 20 guys like watching this happening. But for whatever reason, he's not, it's not really
working.
Happening. Right. Yeah. So then she decides she's just going to give him a blowjob in front of all of us, right? So she then, now she's just like trying to get this like limp penis going in front of her, like doing her best too. But now she's got a crowd watching and now we're all, I mean, now it's really awkward because, I mean, it's kind of like she's performing CPR. Like she's trying, like, you know, breathe, goddammit, get erect, goddammit, you know?
Right, she's panicking.
Right.
Because if she doesn't do this.
This is like her closer.
Yeah, she's getting paid for this.
Right. And then the thing happens that has scarred me forever. His best mate, his best man, comes in and just starts. So she's sucking, but the best man starts like kind of masturbating to help.
No, something's off. Something's really off. That is not normal.
I know that it's not normal. That's the whole reason I'm telling you this story.
No, beyond, I don't think normal's not the right word. That is really strange to me.
It's fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you spit on it? No, I'm joking.
So then I, no.
No, that's really
right?
insane
is that not weird?
To me.
Because for ages I was like, is that like.
What was everyone's response when that happened?
Well, I mean,
I'm
no
serious.
One.
That's really weird to me.
Well, because here's the thing. We were, again, we were the younger two. We didn't really know, like we only knew people through the brother.
Right.
So these people weren't really our friends. They were people we knew. Some of them we went to school with, but they were like 3 or 4 years older than us at school. So they weren't like people that we could kind of go. And you know, when you're the newest person in the room.
Of course.
You just assume that what's going on is the way things.
So no one said anything work. When the guy did that?
No.
Oh, that's weird to me.
No one.
That is very weird. It right? is. I could not see that happening crazy, with any right? of my friends. Yeah. It's traumatizing.
Right.
Did he end up getting off?
You know what? I can't even, like, again, everything after that, like literally everything after that happened, I think I can't remember anything from the next 2 years.
You were.
Because all I was thinking about for 2 years was what the fuck did I just say? I was at second year uni and it was like I woke up in a coma and went, well, hang on, how did I get in Canberra?
I guarantee you didn't tell anyone. Did you not tell anyone?
Well, I mean, luckily enough, my friend Peter and I were both there. So we were able to
right.
talk about it pretty constantly about going, that happened, right?
Yeah, that is very strange
right.
to me. Very.
Oh, and by the way, here's what I didn't mention. When he first started doing it, two fingers. So he went in like a,
oh my
like
God,
a pincher move, like thumb and first finger, just kind of.
This is one of the craziest things I've ever heard.
Right.
And I'm surprised that none of his friends said anything. Like, I feel like if my guy friends were together and that happened, people would be like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, now, if I went to something now and it happened.
But I mean, the other guys, I don't mean you. I can get why you didn't say anything.
Well, I mean,
you
know what? Maybe they did. Like, you know, maybe they did, but I just wasn't aware or conscious. In fact, as you point out, there were 20 people there. Without a doubt, some of them clearly would have, you know, walked away from that experience with the same thoughts as me, I imagine.
That is so... Well, that makes me think that something happened with them before. That's weird.
Oh, you are that there's... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... If
I mean, it's a weird time to do it for the first time, isn't it?
Like, yeah, man, like, we've been friends a while. I'm just going to use two fingers and, like, try to make this work.
It's not gay if it's two fingers and yeah. there's a stripper giving you a blowjob. This is not gay. No, this is just helping.
It's
I'm
not
your best
gay
man.
If it's right before your wedding.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's really interesting.
Is that not... Yeah, it's interesting.
I can see how that scarred you. That would scar me, too.
I mean, and the other thing is... I don't give a shit what people get up to in the privacy of their own
of
houses or bedrooms or whatever. If they want to be doing that together, you know, in their lives, yeah, more power to them. Like, that was my kind of thing with the, even with the Trump, you know, the most recent sort of Trump scandal, the,
yeah.
you know, the golden showers mm-hmm. story that everybody seemed to be so gleeful of. I was like, to be honest, like, using sex workers or enjoying some sort of, you know, non-traditional sexual thing is not particularly something that I give a shit about one way or the other.
I don't either, except when you're married and you claim to be...
Right.
And you know, his whole thing was going off on Bill Clinton and Hillary. And, I mean, that's my only reason.
Oh,
otherwise,
and the fact that
I could care less yeah. what people do in their sex life.
Or, you know, and you could argue if there is a... Like, if these things become things that you can blackmail with somebody with. Like,
that's
if people
the
have
skeletons...
Yeah.
Yes.
If you have skeletons in your closet that can be used to... blackmail you or influence you, then
which
those
he definitely
things...
does. I mean, definitely.
I mean, like, with all the things we know about him out in public, can you imagine what the skeletons are?
Yeah, I mean, he's.
I mean, they've
got to
be literal skeletons, right?
Oh, there's got to be hundreds of skeletons, like a graveyard full. And I can't even. I'm
he's probably not even the first. He's probably not even the real Donald Trump. It's probably like the. Have you ever seen that movie, The Prestige?
Yeah.
It's probably like the end of The Prestige. And if you go under Trump Towers, there's like, you know, just hundreds of Donald Trumps, and every day they yeah. die, and a new one is born.
Yeah, it's like Weekend at Bernie's. Right. You prop him up to talk. I didn't care about that either. I really don't care. I mean, I don't judge anyone for their sex. I could care less. But it's just, you know. I actually feel bad for Melania. I know people like hate her. I feel bad for her. I don't think she planned on any of this.
Oh my God.
I mean, really, I think she's just this woman. She met this guy, this powerful guy, good looking at the time to her, whatever, you know, thought she'd have a kid with him, live this amazing life and have money. And now all of a sudden, it's crazy. She's first lady. She must hate him. I have a feeling she hates him.
Well, she certainly didn't want him to be president.
No.
I mean, she's not even going to move into the Oval Office.
No, she's not.
Oh, into the White House, I mean, you know, but she's not the Oval Office. Yeah, but it's in there.
Yeah,
it's part
it
of
it.
I'm oh, sorry.
Is.
I
and
went.
It's going to be covered in semen.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be the first time.
I know. That's true. No, she's yeah. not even moving there. And I feel bad for her. I mean, she has this kid. He seems awkward and
right.
whatever his issues are. It's just horrible. It's like, I just, you know, but you can't, what's she going to do? Can you imagine? That would be incredible if she left him or just said she wanted a divorce now. That would be unbelievable.
I mean, it'd be great if she has some affair with somebody nice. That's what I would like to say. That yeah. would be the best way, I think. Yeah. Like if it came out that she'd hooked up with Bernie Sanders.
I was just going to say that.
Donald. I was Donald, I've got something to break to you. I've been feeling the burn. And
That's amazing. Can you imagine? He would die if he had sex with her. Like he's just too
Bernie.
Old. Yeah, yeah. Well, who knows? She probably lays there too, like your friend on the cement.
Who knows? Don't know. Who knows? I mean, it's up yeah. to people can do whatever they want to do, I suppose.
Yeah, who cares?
That's the bit I don't care about. I'm less worried about. It was like when people were like, oh, you know, when with her naked photos and stuff like that, and they were kind of like, you know, slut shaming her, really. And I was just like, of all the things you can attack him about, and there are a long, long list of things, you know, things that he's said, things that he's done. You don't need to attack a woman who at some stage had a job. Like, let's be honest, those photos were taken for modeling work, you know. She was just doing her job. And we're a society that asks women to take their clothes off for modeling. I felt like that was, like, the weirdest thing to be shaming somebody for or being upset that, like, you know, the first lady had nude photos of her out there. I mean, I think we're at the point now where from now on we're never going to have a first lady who hasn't had nude photos because... Because, I mean, everybody's had nude photos now since everyone has phones. Like, you're rarely going to find someone who hasn't, you know.
I think it was more so the things that, you know, he was saying and how all these religious people are supporting him. And just there's so many conflicts and it's just, it's crazy.
Oh, I mean, but that's the great, the amazing skill that he's had. Whether it has been on purpose or whatever, but is the idea that he has appealed to so many groups that he has nothing in common with and clearly does not support or whatever, and got the backing of all these, you know, he got the backing of the working class male, and he's literally the complete opposite of a working class male.
Because it's all promises.
Right.
I'm going to do this. This is going to happen. He's a salesman.
Right.
Listen, you're a comic. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Right. I taught comedy for years. If you're confident, the jokes are very, very, very important. But when someone goes up who's confident, who's a good salesperson, they'll sell it. You see it all the time. People with horrible material, and they go up and kill. And you're like, what is going on? And then people with the greatest material in the world have no stage presence and can't sell it, and they bomb.
Well, I tell this story all the time, but like Chris Rock, often when he's trialing new material,
yeah,
will trial it, you know, read it off a piece of paper or like not Chris Rock it.
Right.
Because he's so charismatic once he Chris Rocks it.
Yeah, you're right.
That everything's funny.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even Jimmy Fallon doing an impression of Chris Rock at the Golden Globes was still the funniest bit of his monologue. Right. As soon as you Chris Rock something, it makes it funny. So I know what you mean. And look, I mean, I say it all the time, like, I've never been an amazing joke writer. You know, I try hard, but I'm not like a naturally.
I'm the exact same way.
But, you know, I have an ability to convince people that they are enjoying my company.
I'm the same way. And I think it's really important. That's very, very important. It's not just the joke writing. You know, there's a lot of people who are great joke writers, and I'm like, they'd be better as a writer.
Right.
But as a performer, I'm just not interested. Like, when someone doesn't sell it and they don't seem confident, I just stare at them on stage. I'm kind of not even listening to what they're saying.
And confident doesn't mean, I mean, both of us are a bit bold and, you know, out there, and you can be loud or excitable, and that is a type of confidence, but it's not the only type of confidence. Like, people can be very still and confident.
Yeah, they could be the driest comic in the world, but they're still selling it.
Yeah, that's the difference. Like, what you really want, and I always say this, like, essentially, the audience, when you walk on stage, all the audience want is that sense of, oh, I can relax and let them do their job.
Yes.
That's all they want from you at the start. And it's why people who look too nervous will often just lose the crowd straight away because the whole crowd gets nervous for them and they go, oh, this is not going to go well.
I said, the minute you're walking to the stage, they sense right. it.
And then the other one is people who want it too much because mm-hmm. it can be as bad as, like, you know, if you, like, you've got to be confident, but part of that confidence is saying to the audience, like, through your act of like, well, this is funny. Yes. You know, as in, like, I think this is funny. Yeah. I want you to enjoy it, but if you're not getting it, that's your fault. Like, I'm confident enough to know that my act is, like, interesting and funny and those sort of things. You know, sometimes you see those people on stage who clearly need to be loved so much or whatever.
Well,
that
I always say on stage there's givers and takers. Now, you're clearly a giver. I only laugh at people who really give, and it's not about them getting, you know, like takers. Because you know what I'm talking about. There's some comics, and some of them are successful. I don't find it funny when it's about them. And because most comics I know, you know, they'll get off stage, and it's like, even if they kill, they know they did well, but they still are like, you know, it was great. I did well. But the people that are always like, I killed. I mean, I just have never been like that, ever. You know, I think about the one joke that didn't do great.
Yeah, I mean, but... Yes, and it's why my favorite joke after somebody kills always when they come off is just to say, you'll get them next time.
I know, I love like it's my, you say that.
It's my favorite because to me that is like what I want to hear. I don't want to hear, you know, like that's my way of saying you did great. I would not say that to you if I didn't think that you had killed, you know. But you don't want to hear the opposite. All right, let's talk more about you because, you know, we've already talked for 40 minutes and we've banged on about me and we've banged on about comedy and we've banged on about Trump, but I really want to introduce you to my audience and my listeners. So tell me something about you. What's like, what's your story? What defines you? Where are you at? What are you interested in? You just did a movie with Robert De Niro.
I did. Yeah, I did. I started stand-up almost 18 years ago, and I never thought I would do it. I did it because I was always the class clown, but it's really that, like, anyone who finds out that I'm a comic now is like, of course.
Oh.
You know, I was crazy growing up, and I realized the power of being funny. You know, I realized the power of laughter.
At that age, when you were younger, what power was it? What were you using it for?
Well, I was not a happy kid. So I used humor a lot to deal with the pain. You know, I would make fun of things and laugh about it and make fun of my life and myself. And then I realized that you could, you know, get a lot of friends by being funny, that people like being around someone who's funny. So I realized the power of it, of like winning people over by being a funny person. And it just helped me get through so many things in my life. It really did. And then when I was... in my 20s, my grandmother was watching me one day and just called me over and said, you need to be a comedian. Every time you're around people, they're laughing. You know, she was watching me with my cousins and my siblings. And I said, I could never do that. And I was petrified. I actually went to see a psychologist who deals with fears because I was petrified to get on stage. But I did it and I realized how powerful I felt. And to this day, it's like the only time I really feel present and feel like I'm in control is when I'm on stage. It's like the only time in my life when I really feel like that.
I don't know who originally said it. I've heard Marc Maron quote it and repeat it, and I have then quoted and repeated it, and it, you know, in a very much a telephone way, I'm giving you the gist of this rather than, you know, and I wish I knew who originally said it so I could attribute it properly. But the idea that comedians, you know, do what they do so they can control how people laugh at them, you know, it gives you that power on stage. Barry Humphries, do you know who Barry Humphries is? Do you know the character Dame Edna Everidge?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Barry Humphries is Dame Edna Everidge, and he is, I think, without doubt, Australia's greatest ever comic export. You know, he really, you know, defined comedy in Australia for 40 years and was our most successful international act, you know, by a mile. And, you know, a really brilliant guy, has some terrible opinions as an old person. I always look at him as one of those people, it is an example of, please don't let me become old and boring like Barry.
Oh, yeah,
you know, he's
yeah.
one of those, he's become really conservative. Like, he was so edgy and so brilliantly funny, and now he doesn't like comedians saying fuck and, you know, all those sort of things. And I'm
that?
Like,
yeah.
The last guy who didn't like that was called Bill Cosby, so let's just
exactly. It's the first person I thought of when you just said that.
So But brilliant, you know, comedian. And like, you know, to an Australian, the biggest award at the Melbourne Comedy Festival is called the Barry, named after Barry Humphries. And one of the things that he used to say, he was asked once, you know, what's it like to walk on stage in front of 3,000 people? What goes through your mind? And he said something that like always resonates with me, which is he goes, oh, alone at last.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I feel like that.
Well, because everything else that's happening in your day,
yeah,
everything else, like, you know, people always ask you as a comedian, I think they ask you this, like, if you're having a bad day, how do you do it? And I'm saying, oh, they're the best ones. Because for half an hour or whatever, I don't have to think about my bad day. In fact, right. I can't. I have to get up there and entertain those people. And
yeah.
If you're thinking about anything else in that moment, you can't do that probably.
You're right. That's what I meant about being present. Like, it's really the only time I'm ever fully present is when I'm just on stage and having to focus on what's going on in the room and what I'm going to say and...
Where did you start when you first started doing stand-up?
My New York, I've always been in New York, and my first show was at Caroline's, believe it or not.
Is that right?
Yeah, I took a
class. That's a very famous New York comedy club.
Yep, there were like 300 people there. My whole family was there, like 30-something people. And
I mean, that's nice though, right?
It was nice, and I was petrified, so it was really, really great. And then I started doing horrible open mics, and I did, you know, I've really, really... busted my ass. It's like the one thing I feel proud of, you know. Everything else I kind of did done half, you know, half ass. I really mean that. But with this, I really have given it my all. And so I do now at this point in my career feel like I do deserve stuff. I didn't even feel like that a year ago, but something shifted. And with the movie, with working with De Niro and Taylor Hackford, who's the director who directed Ray and oh my God, a ton of movies.
Yeah. Ray, the Ray Romano movie, right? Jamie Foxx played Ray Romano. It's a great movie. It's a really good film.
Yeah,
very underrated.
He had a horrible tan during the movie.
Did whiteface the whole time. Yeah. It was bizarre, but it was...
That's so funny. An Officer and a Gentleman. I mean, so many movies he did. But they saw me at the Comedy Cellar in New York City. It's an amazing story because this stuff does not happen anymore.
Okay,
so that's
tell
why
me.
I love it so much.
So they literally were just, what, in the room
I
watching
heard
comedy?
They were there. They had been going to see comics for months to
because the movie is
people.
About stand-up
right, De Niro
comedy,
plays
right?
a comic, yep. And he plays a comic who made it huge and then lost it all and has to, you know, come back and be relevant. And they saw me and they loved my stand-up. And I was at a gig like 3 days later and I got a call at noon. I was in Florida on a Saturday from Taylor Hackford saying I had no idea who he was.
Right.
He's married to Helen Mirren. I mean, he's like this huge movie director. And he's like, we saw you. We'd love you to be in the movie. And I said, oh, wow, great. And he's like, yeah, Bob and I would like to meet you on Wednesday. And I'm like, Bob who? And he's like, Bob De Niro. And I'm thinking,
you know, Bob.
What? Like, it was crazy.
In your head, you're like, Robert De Niro doesn't have like a brother called Bob, right? This is the
I'm
same.
Like, who's Bob? I mean, Bob Costa. Like, who is Bob? But I met with them. And in some way... It was so, in a lot of ways, it was very natural. I know people are shocked by this, but I wasn't like I didn't freak out. I don't know. I've been around a lot of famous people. My stepbrother is Zach Braff, you know, the Scrubs Garden State guy. So I've met a lot of people through him and been to all his stuff. And I don't know why. It didn't faze me. I was
now, has he ever cast you in any of his things, Zach?
Zach has called me in on some stuff, but no, I haven't.
I mean, come on, Zach.
Yeah, no, I think that he, I mean, why would I want to be in anything he's made anyway?
I mean, that's right. You're not getting paid properly from that Kickstarter money.
What am I going to get, a t-shirt? But I met with them and then like Harvey Keitel popped in the room and was like, hey, I need to. And I was like, what is, I just felt like I was on another planet.
Right.
But to make a very long story short, they cast me in the movie. So I'm in a scene with he and Leslie Mann. But way beyond that, I ended up being his teacher. I met with him every day at a comedy club. I taught him how to do stand up, taught him how to hold a mic. All the things we've been talking about, I told him. He came to a lot of my shows. We became friendly, and I was on set for the entire. He wanted me there for every single scene. It's a drama. It's not with comedy in
right.
it. So I was there for all the dramatic scenes, and I was in.
I mean,
ear.
It has to be too, by the way, because stand-up comedy movies that try to be funny, just don't work.
Well, there are scenes where they try to be funny. And listen, there's a lot that happened that I had no say in. I mean, right. The director makes the choices. But I fought as hard as I could to you know, tell them what it should be like and what a comic would be like in a relationship and everything. And it was the most incredible experience. I mean, he wore an earpiece and I was on the other end of it for months.
So tell me, because I'm interested in, like, you know, when you're teaching somebody like that, an actor, you know, and a very, you know, obviously, you know, nobody needs me to, you know, explain to them how good an actor Robert De Niro is. They've all seen Dirty Grandpa. They get it.
Yeah, and that was his best performance by far.
Right. That and Rocky and Bullwinkle. I mean, this is a guy who can act. We know
it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But no, I mean, everybody knows how great an actor is. But when you're teaching an actor to act like a stand-up, like, I mean, where do you even start? What did he bring to the table?
I mean, even when you ask me that question, I still can't even believe what I did. Like, I really can't believe what I did and what I taught him and what I told him and how open he was to the feedback. I mean, I was explaining to him how to do stand-up with every single, oh my God, with the audience members, with other comics in his dramatic acting scenes, you know, how a comic would act. Or he was so open to feedback. He was so vulnerable and had so much humility. I can't even express it to you. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. There was no ego.
What do you think was the biggest misconception that he probably had, or the thing that he was just most surprised by?
Right away. The first scene, one of the first scenes we shot was this wedding scene. And he got up and did a speech, you know, but it had, like, stand-up in it. I mean, it was a speech, but it was supposed to be funny. And he just, like, immediately said, this is one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I was like, wow, that is so amazing to hear De Niro say that after everything he's done and everything he's played. And he has said it on late-night shows, too, on Kimmel and Fallon. Like, it was really hard for him because at some point the extras, you know, the actors lost interest, even though it was De Niro, because he was doing the same jokes over and over again, and they were like dead. And I kept saying to them, come on, you got to be upbeat. And I kept saying to him, you know, listen, they're gonna lose. He's like, but it's so hard because they're just staring at me. I said, yeah. That's what it is. You know, it was so amazing. And he really struggled with that.
Right.
I mean, which anyone would, especially when you're this established actor and you go up and, you know, after 10, 12, 18 hours of filming, people are exhausted.
Did he actually do any, like, actual stand-up? Like, did he go to a club and actually
Yeah, he did. We, there's a couple of scenes where he does stand-up, and there's a bunch of stuff I wrote, and then again, a bunch of stuff that I, you know, they chose that I had no say in.
Right.
But we met every day. He is a warrior. Like, when people say, oh, this comes easy, he must just, you know, no. This guy would, I was exhausted. I'm half his age almost. I was exhausted. And he'd be like, well, I want to meet at 9 a.m. tomorrow. You know, when we're done filming at 3 a.m. the night before. And he would go to the gym before that with a trainer at 5 something. I mean, it's insane. And then meet me at a comedy club and go and do the bits and do them in front of me and, you know, try to memorize stuff and then go to set for another 16, 18 hours. I mean, it was insane what he did.
Well, was he a fan of stand-up comedy previously?
Huge fan, huge.
What is he like? Like, did he ever tell you sort of what he was into beforehand? Like, what sort of comedy that he...
He loves all kinds of comedy. He would love you. He loves high energy, you know, just people who tell stories, who get into it, physical. You know, he loved Robin Williams, was a very good friend of his. He likes all kinds of stand-up, really. He's a huge fan of stand-up, and he realized immediately how hard it is, that it's just really hard.
It's a really amazing story.
I know.
It's a really amazing story. I mean, what a great experience in your life.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable, and I connected with him so much and the other actors. And, you know, I said this in an interview the other day. It was the first time in my life where I really had to show up. Like, I was petrified because he hired me. The director didn't.
Uh-huh.
So there were so many times when I would walk in and, you know, the director didn't necessarily want me there because I was going to have feedback that was different. I really fought for what I believed in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to stay quiet because it was easier to just stay quiet, sit in the sidelines. But I was in there. Like, I would get up, go up to Bob and everyone calls him Bob, by the way.
Right.
No one calls him Robert. It's so funny. Like, no one. But I would go up to him and say stuff to him during the whole time, and a lot of times get in trouble. But he'd want me, go, where's Jessica? Where's right. Jessica? Get Jessica. Like, he wanted my feedback. And it would piss some people off. But I kind of became the in-between person where Harvey would come with me to me to ask me feedback, or Leslie Mann or Edie Falco, or, you know, they all would want me there because I was kind of the buffer. I became like the mediator. It was unbelievable. It was crazy.
I mean, that is just an amazing, amazing experience. Yeah. We could talk all day, but we have two shows tonight, and I'm conscious about the fact of, like, you know, not taking up too much more of your time. So what else are you doing now? Like, where can people, like, let's start talking about this, because it'll take us a little bit by the time we finish up anyway. Like, you have a podcast of your own. Can we talk about that?
Sure. I have a podcast called Fat Pig.
Now, why is it called Fat Pig? Tell
people.
Because
it's really, you know what? It started out, it was my friend Frank Liotti's idea of the name, and I thought it was a catchy name, and it's a lot about food and dieting and overeating and secret eating, and, you know, but it's turned into more of like not taking care of yourself, overdoing it with everything. Like, I will overdo it with anything. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm just a complete garbage can addict, you know, like self-sabotaging in a lot of ways.
At these shows we've been doing, they've been providing, I am like, the one thing that I cannot go past is like free food. Like, still to this day, I think it's that comedian thing or whatever, or just like, I'm got enough money now that I can buy my own food.
Yeah.
But if there is free food available,
yeah,
I have to have that free food. And they've been providing, like, you know, like those little finger sandwiches with their, like the crusts are cut off.
I know. It's and kind like, of annoying to me. I feel like I'm like 11, but it's okay.
I mean, I'm eating so many of those sandwiches.
So I've been taking plates to go into my room because I'm like, I'm not wasting all this
meat. I didn't even know
meat.
You could do that. That's
a
good idea.
Oh, yeah, you take a plate. I load it with meat and fruit and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, I've really wasted a couple of days.
You're going to take a whole platter up to your room.
Tonight, in between shows.
You should it. They probably throw it out. Or just,
I mean,
you know.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
So, when it comes to food, what's the one that is there a particular food or a particular thing that like you can't, you know,
chips,
that really goes
salty
to
salty stuff and carbs, any kind of carbs. So I don't eat bread. I haven't eaten bread in years. Yeah.
Why?
Because I can't have a little. I cannot have one piece of bread. I'm crazy. So if I, like, for example, I'll eat, like, it's not bread, but Tostitos, because I'll say it's corn, so it's okay.
Oh, okay,
but
yeah,
they're
sure.
Fried chips. Yeah. Like, you can't, they're not okay.
They're not
but
okay.
But I'm so crazy that I'll say it's corn. It's okay. I can have it. It's fine. Yeah. Or like those vegetables.
Even though corn is actually technically worse for your body in that process.
Exactly. But it's a vegetable. Like, I'm insane. Yeah. Or those like vegetable potato chips, you know, those quote unquote veggie chips.
Yeah,
I'm
veggie
like,
chips.
Oh, no, it's
they're
tomato
healthy.
And carrot.
It's health
potato
food.
Chips with coloring.
It's health food.
Right. I'll eat the whole bag. So I don't eat things that I can't have. You know, I don't do that.
I get the bread thing because bread is probably my go-to because I'm vegetarian. But as I like to remind people, like normally when you say vegetarian, it implies that you like fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
I don't really.
Right.
Like I'm mostly like I eat a lot of bread. Like, you know, in fact, like I'll have days where my three meals will just be. I remember I was in just on tour recently and I felt like in that day I'd had three really specifically different meals. But I'd had like a grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I'd had like a margarita, like a cheese pizza. And then at night I'd had like a quesadilla. And literally
I
just
would eat
had
all of that. Yeah. Like I would be fine just eating that the rest of my life.
Me too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'd eaten essentially the same thing three times in a day.
One
like just
because
I was served. Like, you know, just because I were literally served from different countries' perspectives, it did not mean that I wasn't just eating cheese and bread all
well,
day
cheese
long.
Cheese is a huge one for me. I could eat a ton of cheese. I love cheese,
well,
which
delicious.
Is also bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. I mean, you know, but I'm like, oh, it's cheese, it's milk, it's protein. I mean, right. I'm crazy.
I mean, it's good for your bones, though. I mean, you know,
well,
I mean,
I'll have strong bones and
strong
be 600
bones.
Pounds.
Well, you'll need those strong bones. That's. The bad news is I'm 600 pounds, but the good news is solid.
Yeah.
Standing
I mean,
up
I wouldn't
strong.
Break a bone anyway if I fell because I'd have so much fat.
Well, that's a good point. It's a buffer.
Yeah, you're right. It you're like, have horrible bones.
Yeah, I'm not fat. I'm just protecting myself from bone injuries. What
you
are you talking about?
You could fall out of a building, and if you're that fat, you'd be fine.
It's fine. I mean, yeah, this is like in case of emergency. I fly a lot. This isn't my only plan for saving myself from a big fall.
I fall a lot.
I fall all the time. I bounce straight back up. Seriously, stop judging me.
That's very funny. It's true. Yeah, so I'm doing that, and I'm working on a TV show about my life being the daughter of a therapist, which we could also talk about for hours, but that with the producers of The Comedian. So I developed a relationship with them and really connected. One of them also has a mother who's a therapist and also saw clients in the house. So we have a lot in common.
So that's interesting to me, the whole seeing clients in the house, because that's where it gets
crazy.
Crazy, right?
Crazy. I grew up... There was no cell phones then. We're talking about, you know, when we were younger, really. I mean, I answered the door for my mother's clients, and she is incredibly disorganized, so never wrote down when they were coming, who was coming when. I mean, it sounds like it's unbelievable, but people would just show up for appointments two at a time. I would have to explain to them where she was.
That's what you want
totally
when you're going
true.
To therapy, isn't it?
I felt uncomfortable and bad for people my entire life. Because these are like damaged people, and I had no way of getting into touch with her. So if she was out, I had no way of finding out when she was coming home, what was going on. I was enraged and embarrassed. And they would sit and just wait for her. And a lot of times they would leave if she wasn't there, or two would come at a time, and I'd feel bad for the one that was waiting. And it's just, it's this crazy situation.
Is there something
Plus,
about-
I had to be quiet constantly.
So is there something about, I mean, because obviously, you know, your mum being a therapist, that's someone who's helping other people, you
exactly.
know, right?
Exactly, that was her mission.
But does that mean that you don't get that at home?
Is it like a lot of what the show is about. It's about, like, everything looks good on the outside. You know, I grew up with some money and the nice house and everything looked okay, but she was out saving the world and was not focused on her kids. And it's not because she's a bad person. It's just she just really wanted to, like, save the world. To this day, she's like that. And she's shown up a lot more over the years, and I forgive her. But I did not have a mother growing up that was around at all. And it really affected me in my life, like, a lot.
It's interesting. And, and that's something that you think, you know, is, will be like, that's the show. Like if you feel like that's, are you in this show? Are you, cause if it's, is it set like in that sort of time?
Yeah. It's,
so
it's,
does that mean that, who will you be?
Well, see, I don't, this
who
is
do
the,
you get
this
to
is
be?
The interesting thing. I don't even know if I'll be in it or not. And I don't care. Like, I really don't care. I'm so passionate about doing this and about doing a show about this.
Could you be one of the, you could be one of the regular clients,
that's
though,
funny
right?
you just said that because that's what we've talked about.
Right.
I mean,
because that's
easily,
a good way, that means
great...
you get to be in it, but you don't have to be the...
Well, that's, I see comics being the clients.
Right.
I mean, this is totally what I see.
Right. Well, that makes sense. That's a good idea. It's a great way to get...
And have guest appearances and people who, right. So basically it's about that, but it's also about all the dynamics. Like the parents have a lot of tension. The father's passive aggressive. You know, the kids are screwed up. Their kids are screwed up. So it's based on like now, the things that we deal with, my siblings and I. And then there's also flashbacks to the 80s when I was growing up. And about, like, perfect example, I used to sit in the on the stairs and eat and listen to her with her clients and listen to her group sessions. And just, you know, it's like you talking about watching this guy laying on the ground.
What sort of things would you hear and
intense,
learn?
Intense, crazy things about relationships. And she'd have couples and they'd be screaming at each other and crying and... You know, it was just intense, like really, really intense. And she also used a lot of things, which I love, like bats and pillows. And
all right.
Yeah. And she was a lot of that. There's
a lot
of props.
Right.
There was, I grew up with like, you know, she
was,
started.
You know, she's a prop therapist.
She is. She was. That's very old school. They used a lot of props, you know.
There she is with a suitcase.
she used a rubber nose, like a red nose. No, she actually, my mom started as an art therapist, so she would always have me draw pictures of my feelings. Like I was never just, I could never have a real conversation with her. Oh, right. You seem angry. Here's some paper and
draw
some
a picture
crayons,
of,
and then she would analyze my picture. Uh-huh. I mean, this is like stuff that needs to be talked about. It's so, there's so much material, I can't even, you know, it's just endless.
Well, we have so many other things we could talk about, but you know, we've come to the end of the podcast, so we'll just have to do another one another time.
Yeah, I would and love continue that.
Where can people, you know, find you? Where are the places that if they want to see your material, or if they want the podcast, or if they want to follow you on like the internet, or mm-hmm. where you feel comfortable telling people, you know, to find you? Where are those places?
Well, I have a Facebook page, Comedian Jessica Kirsten, which is, you know, it's three separate words, and I put up videos almost every day on that. So those have
what
really...
What sort of videos are you putting up
there? Oh my God, tons, like just stuff on the road. I actually wanted to do one with you later.
Okay.
I do videos with other comics. I do them just in the car, in traffic, singing in the car. They're silly. My whole right. thing is about being silly. It's and I'm on Twitter, Jessica Kirsten, Instagram, at Jesse Kirsten, and I'm on the Howard Stern Show a lot. So I don't... Do you guys... You don't get... Do you get Sirius in Australia?
No.
Sirius XM?
So. No, we don't. I mean, people are familiar with Howard Stern, and I do know that people... There are people in Australia who listen to Howard
right.
Stern.
So I'm on it a lot.
So there is obviously some way of accessing Howard Stern in Australia. Right. I'm not sure there's a legal way of doing it, but there's plenty of people who listen to podcasts who understand how to access... Like, basically, if you live in Australia... What it's crazy, but because of the way we are so influenced by American and British culture, and you know mm-hmm. we see it all the time. And so, say you're a fan of like game, like Australia, I think is the number one illegal downloader of television shows in the world.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not because Australians hate paying for content, because if you offer them content that is easily accessible at the right time, they will definitely pay for
it. Of course.
But it's because of the way our stupid system works that, like, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, it'll play on like Sunday night in America, and then it won't be on Australian TV for 3 weeks. So you have to essentially avoid the internet for 3 weeks. So
got it.
Yeah. So I mean, what happens in Australia is, I remember I was doing a Q&A with I think it was with Alan Ball, you know, the creator of 6 Feet Under, and there was one whole series of something that hadn't been out in Australia, and everybody in the room had seen it. And you were like,
oh, wow.
Like everybody. And he was like, you know, we're like, well, yeah, we found a way.
I remember when I was in Australia that I saw some shows. I'm like, oh my God, this is a blast from the past. There's some old shows on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so funny. That was really funny to me.
What were you in? I mean, we're finishing up. I have a tour. I'm going to give it a quick plug. You can find all the details at comedy.com.au, but I am going to Adelaide, Brisbane, Hobart, Melbourne, Sydney, Perth. I think there's a Wagga gig. I think there's some others. But anyway, all the details, comedy.com.au or willanderson.com.au. And of course, TOEFOP, my other podcast with Charlie and Willosophy and all those sort of things. So check all those out. But you came to Australia. What? How did you find Australia? What was it?
I loved it. I did the Melbourne Comedy Festival and I loved it so much. I had a blast. I was there for 3 weeks and it was so much fun. I thought it was beautiful.
How did you find the comedy audiences there? What were they like?
I mean, I think some of them, like, I had to ease in a little bit. Some of them pretended to be a little more PC than I think they really are.
Right.
So it was a little, you know, it took me a minute to just figure it out.
Because you did headliners, right? Is that what you did, or did you do your own
solo
show? I
did headliners, yeah. And I had a great time.
I think headliners can be that audience.
Mm-hmm.
They can be a bit more, I think they're a bit of a, how do I put this? It's not sort of, you know, they're not the people who are going out and seeing people's 1 hour shows and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Headliners can be a bit more of a kind of a, I think just a more mainstream
crowd. Yeah, it depends who you're working with too.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Big, big part of it.
Oh, I think someone's knocking at the door. It's probably room service, not room service, housekeeping or something like that. So let's finish up. And thank you very much for doing
the
podcast.
Thank you. I love you. You're
amazing. I'm glad we got to do it. And we'll talk to you all again soon.